Morning, everybody. You must really want to listen to this. I guess you're staying all the way to the end. I just was told this morning when I came in that this talk coincides with the Soul business meeting. It's happening like two rooms down, so I appreciate you being here. I had a long night last night, not for reasons that you may speculate already may come up with, but I was sleeping, and around midnight that I was drifting and in the twilight zone thinking about rehearsing the talk, the fire alarm went off in my hotel, and we got out, and we didn't go to bed until 3 o'clock. Somebody apparently walked, we were told, into the hallway, wanting to go to the bathroom, and on the way out, they just pulled down the fire alarm. I don't know why he was upset about. I'm sure there was a lot in his mind, but anyway, we can all speculate why that was, but here I am. So when I was asked to give this talk, I thought about, the watershed I was going to talk about and what study area I was going to select. I've worked in many areas, and to be honest, in southern U.S., southeast, there is none such thing as pure forest. Everything has been probably logged and then reforested. So the area that I'm talking about today is kind of a mixed. It's you'll see later. But it has been historically a forest, and only during the last 100 and 150 years has been converted into pasture and then back to forest and some other ag land. But as you will see, still the history, the soil have a long memory, and so the history of what has been there for centuries, it's still there, and it still affects the hydrology of this watershed. And a little sort of a side story, how I got into the digital soil mapping was because I was trying to run distributed hydrological models. And if you are familiar with Sergo data, sometimes they're patchy from county to county, they are mosaiced. And sometimes the distributed models get confused and they don't work. And so I had to now learn digital soil mapping techniques to get to a product that would make happy the model and could run. So I want to acknowledge also all my co-authors here who helped me a great deal to navigate through the maze and figuring out the watershed and understanding what was going on and figuring out also the procedures. So this is sort of a laundry list, if you wish, but if you bear with me, I'm going to go through this, and this slide is going to appear many times, because this is somewhat the process that was followed in order to come up with a reasonable map to predict stream flow using a distributed hydrological vegetation model, DHSVM. So we were fortunate that there is a lot of surveys in this area, so we were not like in the British Columbia case. So there was already an existing map, which sometimes is a blessing, sometimes it's not, because then you have to deal with all the information, and sometimes that's not consistent either. So sometimes you wish you have a clean slate and just start from the beginning, but that was not the case. So we had to utilize the current soil survey maps, and we sort of knowing a bit about the area, we were sort of thinking that if we could select some areas that are representative of the entire watershed, a bigger watershed, we can use this to upscale what we observe in this small watershed and assign the same sort of properties and values to a much larger watershed, because stream gauges for most of the cases from the USGS are not on small catchments like 5 to 10 hectares. They are usually on HAC 12s, which vary from sometimes 30, 50 to maybe 100 square kilometer. So we selected two small catchments, and then we installed a series of water monitoring instruments, and I mean wells, piezometers, flumes, and rain gauges. The idea was to understand fully what the water flow in these small watersheds. And we wanted also, especially the hydraulic conductivity. This is one of the most important parameters in any hydrological model. And if you don't have a good grasp of it, then the models could go. It's very sensitive, in other words. So any prediction is very sensitive to. So having a good understanding and a good number assigned to the soils for hydraulic conductivity makes a big difference, and you'll see later in the results that that was the case. So again, then we use this digital soil mapping techniques to upscale the observed and measured hydraulic properties and also soils to a larger watershed, and then we simulated the stream flow through the DHSVM, and then compare that with the measured one. So that was sort of the path that we went through. It didn't start that way, but it ended this way anyway. So here is, again, a block diagram of a soil survey from the study area. And these block diagrams are very, very useful and informative because they show you the relationships between soils and the terrain. And in this particular area, this is very true. The soils are very well sort of tied to some terrain features. This is somewhat an old landscape, relatively speaking, to 2.5 million years. And it's made mostly of lush covering sandstone and shale. And again, when you see this block diagram, you can understand some of the relationships. And what's more important is that you can apply this now for the entire area. And this is one of the block diagrams for one specific county where the watershed happened to be. So again, within this big watersheds, we selected two representative small catchments, not more than 5 to 10 hectares. And there's a good reason for that. If you find bigger ones, then you have other problems when it comes to measuring the hydraulic conductivity and other properties. The variability becomes so big that you can probably then you have to wonder whether or not you're selecting the right values to upscale them to the larger watersheds. So here are sort of a view of what this watershed look like, the small catchments. Here is a catchment. Here is a pasture catchment. Here is the forested one within the same watershed. And this is sort of a typical landscape, what it looks like today. This used to be all forest, but now you have pasture, and then you have forest mostly on steep slopes. And as I said, you have lush covering all these areas, especially in the summits, the caps, those are still there present. And then you have siltstone shale exposed at the bottom due to erosion, but you also have lush and colluvium at the bottom. So it's kind of a mix, but you're pretty much you have lush being eroded, moving around, being worked out, and then you have sandstone and shale exposed at the very bottoms. So then, again, as I said, we installed in these two small catchments some water monitoring instruments. Here is a layout of how this worked. Again, we use the topo sequence or the slow position. That was the idea. Water usually flows very fast down these slopes, and so it's a typical slope that you find everywhere in this big watershed. So what you see here, you see everywhere. So you have a good reason to hope that you can sort of upscale and replicate this to a much larger watershed. Here is Dr. Schoenberger happy measuring the K-sets with ohmmeters. And we also installed along this transect on key slow positions wells and piezometers, as you can see in this transect, and also a flume. And you can calculate hydraulic conductivity from all this in different ways. There are different formulas. This is not something that we invented. This has been done for a long time by many, many people in the past, so we didn't invent anything. So here is a closer look at the watershed. Again, what we're trying to do with installing piezometers and wells is to avoid this situation. When you measure K-sets in points, you always are dealing with variability. You may hit crack, and these soils have some structural cracks because these are old soils, well developed with good structure. If you hit those, the K-sets can go way up. But if you hit another part just next to it, which is some sort of a matrix, if you wish, and then the K-sets is very slow. So having the ability to install this instrument and also, more importantly, the flume, it helps you to sort of contain the variability or control it. And it's very practical, too. You cannot afford, obviously, to do this all over the watershed, but if you do it in a very precise way, and if you, because you understand the soils and the landscapes, from the surveys and the knowledge that has been accumulated, you have an advantage right from the beginning in measuring these case sets. So again, then we employ some digital soil mapping techniques, again, to make this continuous soil property maps that would be useful for inputs to the model. And again, the same block diagram now, but in the previous talk you heard about multi-resolution valley bottom flatness, Mr. And but you have also reached off flatness, and you have also other terrains that terrain attributes that work very well to predict these soils, especially when the slopes are very, very pronounced. And so here is, for example, in this block diagram, how numerically we developed relationships between the soils that were conceptually represented in these block diagrams and how numerically you can represent them using different terrain attributes. So that was the path we followed. Then, once we did this, we went to simulate the distributed. We went to simulate the stream flow on this watershed using DHSVM. Here is the DHSVM. It's a distributed model. It's a very data intensive. It requires pretty much the elevation. It's given. You have to have the precipitation. It's basically a water balance on a pixel by pixel basis. You have the inputs, which consist of soils, and then the outputs are soil moisture, water table, runoff, and stream flow. In this case, we only are going to focus on the stream flow, the discharge. All these other parameters are also calculated, and this model is very good and powerful, but it's a bit clunky to run. So I had to suffer when I ran this, but I did, and I don't want to ever go back to it. So here's the study site. Again, as I was saying, these are the two small catchments, the two small watersheds. This is the pasture, this is the forest one. And here are bigger, in a bigger scale. And they are part of this small watershed here, HAC 12. However, this one, HAC 12, didn't have any stream gauges, so we went down to this other one, and that which had a stream gauge. However, knowing that this soils had same similar patterns as this one, we transferred all the knowledge that we gathered from that watershed to this one. So this is a true, kind of really a true validation because it is independent. And in this case, we use the concept that it was explained yesterday, soil systems. These are typical soil systems that are very consistent throughout this entire MLRA. So if you have been here and know a great deal about the soils, you may as well talk about this because it's very similar. So we have that advantage. Of course, in other cases, this may not be the in other examples, this may not be the case, but we were lucky in this situation. So again, going back to the study side, you can see again that the majority of the soils here formed on lush, over weathered sandstone and silt. So it's fairly uniform a bit. So it gives you this, you have an advantage. So here's a typical soil profile. These soils are characterized by lush, but right at the bottom of this, there is this BTX or a fragipan formed. And this is what I was referring to earlier about the memory of the soil. Although these are sometimes in pasture sites, you still have this fragipan present. And that's because of the combination of the lush thickness, the differences in two different parent materials. You're talking about lush over sandstone and the presence of the forest. These are three major sort of contributors to developing these fragipans. And this is a paper from friends of mine that I didn't show here, but he's the one that sort of came up with the idea and explains. Okay, yeah, I'm almost there. And you can see some. You can see where the water table is because you obviously have creatures here that are not happy that we disturb them, and they were lucky. We're not hungry, otherwise there would have been lunch, but we didn't do that. So here is the Hall Creek watershed, the other one, again, where we had the stream gauge, and you can see that how the land, you can see how it has changed, the land use, but you still have, again, hydrologically speaking, this soil acts like if it's a forest. But when you put the instruments, as I'll show you, there is a bit of a different response to it. Here is the precipitation. And here are the data from the Pasha and the Flume. These are the stream flows. And you can see the match between the rain events and the stream flow. Of course, the Pasha watershed was a bit bigger in size, and that's why you have a bit higher sort of a stream flow. But more or less, the peaks match, and they are very close to each other as well. Now, when you look, however, into the wells, and I'm showing only the wells here, you can see the differences in the steepness of the slopes. And these are the events that we use to calculate the KSAT values in the same way that we did for the stream flow. These are the slopes, these are the events, and those are the ones that we use to calculate the KSAT. So when you look at this, however, there are some differences in terms of the slope, and this is mostly related due to the not only slope but the compaction. This pasture areas are a bit more compacted, so naturally they're going to have a bit more sort of they're going to be more responsive and very very much steeper recession limbs. So here is the results of the KSATs from different instruments that we measured. These are the point observations. These are the wells, piezometers and flumes, and you can notice how variable the point measurements are and how less variable these are. However, when you look into the means, they are very comparable. The piezometers are a bit low, and we know why, because when you measure those, you measure only a very small layer of soil, but when you measure wells, you measure the entire thickness. So so this was a bit kind of a rewarding for us, because we were very sure now that we could assign some good values without having to worry whether or not they are representative. They were, because we had three different ways of looking at the same number, at the same rate of KSAT. Again, going back to the digital soil mapping, these are the soils now that were occurring all in the entire watershed, and these are the parameters, the terrain attribute threshold values we used to predict this. And here are the hydraulic properties that were generated from the digital soil mapping approach. And then again, we simulated now the stream flow, and here is the final results. You can see that this model overall explained 52% of variability, and this was without any calibration at all. Now, if you talk to hydrologists, they will be very excited about this, because we didn't fool with anything, we didn't tweak the model, we just make sure that the parameters that we used were the right ones or were fairly close to being accurate. During the wet seasons, you explain 72%, and that makes a good sense, because you have big storms and the whole watershed is saturated, so it's more responsive. But during the dry season, it's very low, because you have evapotranspiration, you have storms that are not necessarily covering the entire watershed. But the good news is that you can do this now in a smart way, and using the existing knowledge, if you wish, and not having to install or measure the hydraulic properties everywhere in the watershed, because it's expensive. So again, these are some of the conclusions. As I already mentioned during the previous slides, if we understand the soils and we know their distribution, we should be able to upscale this and predict stream flows and other properties that are of interest for us. So in this case, we just didn't make a digital map just for a good look and a good map, but we had a purpose for this. However, we were lucky, as I said, because the watershed is fairly simple and it has a fairly uniform pair of materials. And so, however, in other cases, when you have different hydrologies or bigger watersheds, this may not be the case, and we may have to reevaluate this. So that's all I had. Thank you.